Wednesday, July 6th, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio. Good morning to you if you aren't just tuning in. Also with racing today, Warwick Farm's off and it goes to Canterbury tomorrow, that meeting. Kembler tomorrow is off and that meeting moves to Goulburn on Friday. Now, a story we haven't touched on yet. Now, the NRL issued a statement on Monday saying that the Australian Rugby League Commission had bought Gambaro's, which is an institution there in Brisbane, just near Caxton Street, the hotel and the restaurant there. And down the bottom of this release, it says the hotel accommodation operation will be rebranded as the NRL and be themed with rooms named after the game's legendary players. And I know the person who is already clamouring to book room 674. Named after Laurie Daly, is Dean Bulldog Richie. Morning to you, Bulldog.
Yeah, good morning. Loz, Clarkie, Middo, morning, great buddy. To be here. How are we all?
Very well, Doggy. What's happening?
Doing well.
Your haircut, Loz. What's happened there?
What do you mean? Everyone's entitled to get a haircut.
Maybe you should think about wearing a balaclava.
When it gets noticed so significantly, Loz, it's because you never have one. You do know that, don't you?
Yeah.
Any sort of trim, everyone's like, whoa, has Loz lost 10 kilos? What's happened?
Because I only like to have a couple of haircuts a year.
And you had one 2 months ago, because I got one the same time.
Yeah, I got one. I'll tell you when I got it. I got it the week before I went to Wagga, because it always takes about a week to settle down my hair.
Just 2 months
to be
ago.
At its best. So I knew I was going to Wagga for the Wagga Cup, so I wanted to look at my peak. So I got the haircut about 10 days before, and then I strutted into Wagga.
And it was a strut.
And away I went.
I think it's time for a cap.
Cap?
For that
I'm not
week.
Going bald.
No, just to cover it up for that week.
So, oh, you're right.
So it settles, as you say.
Yeah. You've got to settle.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
You're going away to Origin, so you want to look at your peak for Origin, right?
That's exactly
so
right.
So you've got 1 week to wear the cap. Let it settle.
Right.
Then you can charge out on the field like when you were playing.
Well, that's what you do, Bulldog.
How was Queenstown?
Queenstown was good. Had a top really spot. Lovely time over there with my wife. Went sightseeing. Saw some family. So it was good.
See the Earnslaw, the Remarkables?
Any what?
The Earnslaw, the old boat that goes up Lake Wakatipu.
Yeah, I did. Well, I went out to a place called Wanaka.
Yes, I've been to Wanaka a couple of times.
Which is lovely. And the old Cadrona pub. Have you ever been to Cadrona?
No.
It's on the way to Wanaka.
You go past
it. It's a lovely old pub.
Arrowtown's out that way too.
Arrowtown.
Beautiful.
It's just outside of Queenstown, Bulldog. You should be a New Zealand tourist. Work for New Zealand tourism.
Photos of you holding hands with your wife. And I thought, you know what? Lovely, romantic, warm, yet staged.
Definitely.
What
staged.
About the caption?
Stage.
Did you see the caption?
You need to learn how to love.
What was the caption, Mido?
It was Queenstown with my queen.
What are you laughing at?
You get away with words, haven't you? Hey, you're an old bloody romantic, aren't you?
Well, tell Michelle. Ring Michelle up and tell her you don't like that photo.
No, it's beautiful, Laurie. I just said that. The Remarkables in the background.
I'm trying to be an influencer.
A little bit of heaven over New Zealand.
That's what I want to be.
Fair enough. What about Origin? What are you thinking?
Who's playing?
Victoria and South Australia.
When's that game on?
Who wins and why, Loz?
New South Wales will win. I think it's a good side. I think Queensland, to me, this is their worst team out of the three.
Oh, don't say that. You get in trouble.
What do you mean? No, I didn't say the worst team in the history. I'm saying out
I've
of the three games.
same, Bulldog.
I think it'll be more than competitive, though. I don't think you're going to score a line like we did in Perth.
Just get the feeling Queensland will be steaming after that second
half. Oh, they will be. They will
be. That was embarrassing.
Yeah.
They turned up their toes.
Yeah. But, you know, they've got some issues defensively, Queensland, when you really look at it. Like, their right edge, Kafusi's not there to help Cherry Evans, so he's going to have Nenai there, who was poor defensively in that game. And at times for the Cowboys, he hasn't, you know, he's been solid without being great defensively, you know. You've got Cherry, who can make some bad decisions. You've got Gagai, who's missed plenty of tackles throughout this Origin campaign. You've got young Selwyn Cobbo on the wing, who didn't play well in Origin 2. Now, they're not all going to play bad, but I still see issues in that right edge defence for Queensland. And I reckon New South Wales with, you know, Burton, Luai, Cleary, Yeo combination, they do it as well as anyone in you know, being able to rip a team apart on the edge there. So,
what did we all make of Latrell? Was everyone comfortable with him pulling out?
Yep.
I certainly was, and I think it was great of Latrell, very selfless act to dedicate himself to South. But I guess it brings up that question, without trying to be critical, you know, does a player have the right just to pull out? Contract says you can't.
I think circumstances are different. I think it'd be different.
What do you mean, Bulldog? Contract says you can't.
Every standard NRL contract, Clark, he says that you must be make yourself available for representative football.
Really?
And if you pull out, you are then automatically stood down for the following weekend's game.
I thought it was invitational. I thought that's why you get paid.
No, no. It started about 10 years ago, Clarky, with Jamie Lyon. Was not that fussed about playing rep football, and they said,
"Yeah, I remember, yeah."
Well, if you're not going to play for Origin, that's fine, but you can't play for Manly. So that was when the rule was implemented.
Now, for me personally, I think the circumstances surrounding Latrell, I think it would have been unfair on him as well. I just don't think he would have been ready. I'm sure he would have been able to maybe get through the game, but that's a question mark. And I would see it differently if you were playing and then you said, no, I don't want to play. I can understand then being stood down. But the fact that he was coming off such a long injury, history of hamstrings, been across to America, had COVID.
A fortune.
Sorry?
Cost South a fortune.
50K. Yeah.
That's got to be taken into consideration with all the clubs.
Well, you've got to think about your long term too. Yeah. You know, he's not saying he's standing down from representative football full time. All he's saying is, I need to miss this game because my body's not right and I need to get myself back into shape. Because I've spent all this money trying to get my body right. I don't want to rush back and re-injure it.
If he was available, would you have picked him?
If he was available?
If he was available, and after that
no
performance
brainer.
When he came back?
No-brainer.
You would have picked him, Clarkie?
Mate, are you joking?
No,
100% of the time, mate. If Latrell is fit, I don't care how well someone has played in his position. If Latrell is fit, you're talking about Mark Waugh. Like, mate, you walk straight back into any team at any time if you're fit. No brainer.
He's a superstar, isn't he? But, you know, you're right. I get your point of view by saying, no, one game back from Origin, that's a big ask.
Yeah, and the other thing you take into consideration, where I reckon you would heavily discuss it, is the fact that he was out for so long.
I'm confused about what you just said, though, Bordo. If he can't pull yourself out then. If what you're saying is correct, then how has he been able to pull himself out?
Well, it was a bit of I wouldn't say a loophole, Clarkie, but he pulled himself out on the Saturday night.
Yep.
Freddie didn't pick the team until Monday. So I guess for Latrell to have been stood down, Freddie then would have had to come out and say, I was going to pick him and he pulled out. But you know, I don't think Freddie was ever going to say that. If nothing else, he would protect Latrell by saying that he's going to cost Latrell a game.
He was no certainty of being picked.
And he was no certainty of being picked, albeit there's a lot of people like you, Clarkie, who would have put him straight back in there based on that one effort against Parramatta.
Yeah, I think he goes back. But I can understand Middo's point. You know, he's had a lot of injuries with his hammy. And, you know, you'd certainly discuss whether you thought he could get through or not. But, you know, even Latrell, you know, speed of the game, not having played a lot of football, there would be doubts about him getting through the 80 and putting his hemi under plenty of fatigue. But if he said to me, I'm ready to go,
you've got to
find a spot
definitely
for him.
Reece Walsh, big story that broke last night, courtesy of some News Corp colleagues, Bulldogs. So is it virtually inevitable now that he ends up back at Brisbane from what you're hearing?
Yeah, this has been brewing for a while now. You know, I wrote a story on February 7 saying that he would leave the Warriors and go back to Queensland. That story got shot down, which is fair enough. I knew it was right.
Geez, your stories get shot down a lot.
I do, don't they? And you know what? I always have the last laugh. The only problem is it's normally on this show.
But you've been proven correct the last couple of days.
I have, and here's another one. Yeah, he was always going back to Queensland.
How dare you get it right, Bulldog?
Exactly. Thank you, Clarkie. Walsh always wanted to go back to Queensland. He didn't want to take his young family to New Zealand. That's what I wrote back then, and that's proven to be correct. At that time, though, to be fair, I was told that he was more leaning toward Redcliffe because he wasn't that keen on playing under Kev, because Kev was the one that actually said to him, you can leave the Broncos if you want, off you go, go and join the Warriors. And I think that stung a little bit for young Reece. Yeah. But obviously things have thawed a bit and looks like he will go back to the Broncos.
Is it right that the Warriors have said you can go to the Broncos, but that's their only club?
Buzz Rothfield, who gets exceptional mail, posted that on social last night. So if Buzz said it, I will believe it.
Yep.
I know a couple of times Wayne has come out and said he's chasing players who are under contract. Certainly one of those was Reece Walsh. That upset the Warriors camp, rightly so. It's happened again with Cameron Munster. As late as last week, Wayne was discussing Munster for 23. Even though Munster has a contract, it then prompted the ridiculous situation where Melbourne Storm put Cameron Munster up on their social pages to say, I am here for 23, even though he has a contract. So it is getting farcical. But yeah, I think there is a little bit of friction between those two clubs, the Dolphins and the Warriors. And if Buzz is right, which I'm sure he is, he'll end up at the Broncos. It's a blow, though, because I heard you this morning, Laurie, saying that they would have pieced their future together around a kid like Reece Walsh. He's also very marketable. He's a good style of a kid, and he would have been a real... he could have been the new Sean Johnson in New Zealand in terms of rugby league, so it's a shame for them.
Yeah, oh, it's a massive blow. It's a big blow because they invested the last couple of years in him, believing that he was going to be a part of this new wave of kids coming through for the Warriors. They could build a franchise around him, but they'll have to start again. Talking about starting again, the Tigers, what do they do, Bulldog, in terms of their coach?
I wrote a story today, Laurie, which appeared on the back page. It's online as well, which you were involved with. I spoke to Ricky Stewart yesterday, and Ricky was more than happy to go on the record and support the Tigers signing Tim Sheens as head coach for 2 years. It was very brave of Ricky to say that, given he is the coach of a rival club. But Ricky said, look, he has the experience. He won't be swayed by outside noise. He'll know how to play the game politically. He's got a wonderful football brain. And for Sheens to come in as an experienced coach at that club, Ricky believes he would be the best choice, not a rookie coach. Take a rookie coach along for the ride for 2 years and then hand over. And then I spoke to you yesterday, Laurie, and then I also spoke to Mal Meninga. So I've got three Raiders legends all saying that Sheens should be the man to lead the Tigers. And the more I think about it, the more I'm starting to believe what you guys say. And I think at that club, at this moment, they need a hard head there. Sheens is their man, for my liking. Take the young bloke with you, hand over in 2 years, and I think you've got the core of a very good coaching staff.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with that, Bulldog. I think I've told you on and off the record before how highly I think of Tim Sheens. I think he's an exceptional person. One of the greatest coaches of all time. Taught me and a lot of those other Canberra Raiders players a lot about the game.
Mal said a lot about life, much respect. Too. Yeah. He said Mal said he gave him the captaincy. He had belief in me. He had faith in me. It was more than just football.
Well, he treated you like a father and son relationship. Well, in particular, me. So he was always there if I did something wrong to put his arm around me, but also to give me a kick up the bum when I needed it.
There's some great examples of it working. I can think of a couple in the AFL, like Kevin Sheedy at GWS handing to Leon Cameron, Paul Ruse to Simon Goodwin, and both ended up making grand finals. Yeah. Jason Demetriou is doing it now after Wayne Bennett.
He's a great man manager too, Tim, And, people might say, well, he's old and hasn't coached for a long time, but you've got other assistants in and around you that you can get to do your defence or get to do your attack or whatever it may be. For me, he was great in terms of learning the game, but also his man management skills. And as I say, when you were down, he could tell you were down, and he'd pick you up and give you a cuddle and give you some worldly advice, as a dad would, and honest advice. But he'd also there, when you needed a bit of a revving, he'd give it to you. But you knew once you walked out that doors from having a revving, the relationship was still as strong as ever. And that's what I like about a coach, the fact that you can sit down, he can be brutally honest to him, you can be honest back. There's no grudges at the end of it. You walk out there and you continue on with a great relationship, and that's how he's always operated. And I reckon that's one of the major reasons he's had a lot of success. You look at Craig Bellamy down there in Melbourne. Mate, he would give those players a roasting when they needed it, but they all love him. They'd all have got such a great relationship with him.
The coaching is evolving in rugby league, isn't it, Loz, in terms of, 10 years ago the coach did everything, but now gradually it's becoming a bit like the EPL and the NFL where...
Well, it's the staff now.
The staff is so important, and the head coach is still incredibly crucial, but he can pull back a little bit if need be and let the others take over, and they can look after certain areas of the game. So it's not now about the head coach doing absolutely everything.
No, he hands off. He gives jobs to other people. He's in charge and he sits above everyone, but there's other people that are accountable for certain aspects of the game.
Morning, Doug.
How are you?
Yeah, we're good, mate. What have you got for us this morning?
Well, Tyron Peachey, where's he going to now? So since he's left the Tigers, what's going on about that?
Yeah, there's no club at all at the moment, Doug, which is a little surprising. I think he'd be a handy pickup. I'm sure, Loz, you would agree, given his utility value. I'm not sure he's actually left the club, Doug. I'm just trying to work it out right now. I know he's been told he can negotiate with other clubs. He is under contract for next season, but he can leave. But I don't think he's actually left as yet. That would only come if he finds a club. And at this point, Doug, I don't think he's found that club.
I think he's been well-liked in the Tigers, it's good to imagine.
Yeah, he's probably been a little bit disappointing, Loz. Would you agree in terms of...
He hasn't really settled in there. He hasn't really settled in to the West Tigers. I like him as a player, Peach.
Did you pick Peachy?
No, I've coached Peach. Peachy, yeah. I've coached him in the Indigenous All-Stars. I don't know what his best position is. That's the other issue you got with Peach. Because he can play a number of positions. You always tend to sort of throw him in at the centre position if you're short. You throw him into the back row if you're short. You'll put him on the interchange bench because you see him as a utility. If we get an injury in the halves, we'll throw him into 5'8". So he hasn't really had time to settle into a position, and I think that affects some players. But I like him as a player. I think he's a very good player. You get him in the right environment, the right system, I think he'd be a very, very good pickup for a team.
Yeah, Doug, we've just looked it up. He's playing 6 for the Magpies against Parramatta in the New South Wales Cup. So he's back in reserve grade. That game at Leichhardt Oval on Saturday afternoon.
There you go, Doug. Thanks for the call, mate. Big Al, morning to you.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Good, thanks, Al.
Look, I think we should be giving the Latrell Mitchell praise and whatever. Because, as you said, it costs South Sydney a lot of money to send him overseas to get his hamstring fixed. He's came back. He's played one game after, 3 months? He showed spirit. He showed courage. And I think he was saying to Brad Pittler, look, I'm not 100% fit. I don't want to be a... I don't want to let the side down. Please, I won't play. And he's dedicated to South Sydney to say, well, look, you know, years have done this for me, so I'll play for you, the club that pays me, and I'll show you respect. So, you know, I think Latrell's really showed compassion and courage there, don't you?
Yeah, I think he showed a lot of maturity too, Big Al. He could have gone and said, look, I'm playing, but he thought, you know what, I'll take a sensible approach to this. I don't even think South officials knew Latrell was going to say that, Loz. I think they'd even caught them on the hop. In that, they were delighted, don't get me wrong, but I don't think they saw that coming.
No, you used two words there, Bulldog, that I agree with, maturity and sensible. Because I think that the sensible decision for Latrell was to pull out. And again, the history of his hamstring, the fact that he'd been over to America, came back, catch COVID, he's had one game back, throw him into the Origin environment, and if he was underdone a touch, he was always going to get found out. And if he wasn't fully prepared for it, he shouldn't play. And I think he's made the tough decision, because everyone wants to play Origin. Everyone wants to play Origin, but he deep down knows that, one, I don't know whether my hamstring will hold up to that intensity of the game, and two, Souths have done a lot to get me ready for the back end of the season, and they've spent, you know, $50,000 to $75,000. This is my long term income. I need to have my body as good as it possibly can. I can't afford for it to break down again. And that was the mature decision to be made.
You imagine the Souths fans, Loz, if Latrell played Origin and his hammy went again. Oh. And that was it for the year. They'd be told to be cranky.
Oh yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Good on you, Big Al. Thanks for the call, mate.
So I've been bagging your hair, Loz, haven't I?
Yeah.
Just had a look at Clarkie's. What's going on with your hair, Clarkie, at the front there?
What do you mean?
It's a bouffant.
Same as normal.
Mm. It's a Chad Townsend style haircut.
What do you call that style, Clarkie?
It's a bit blow wavy.
What do you mean?
It's got to be a style. It's got to be a name after it. The bouffant at the front.
It is very buffy. Isn't
it is. Yeah. You've got the. Have you had the sides shaved?
Yeah, the other day.
Right. Yeah. So you've shot at the sides are shaved, and now you've left. You've left hair up on the top.
No, same haircut as normal.
No, it does look well spotted.
Maybe because it's a light, or maybe because there's no product in it. I don't know.
Looks like there's plenty of hair.
I love it when you scramble.
I've got plenty
plucking.
Of hair, though. I've got plenty to
scramble.
Spare for you two, that's for sure. If you need any, sing out.
You just really wanted to rattle his cage.
I love it when you scramble over hair. No, it's great to sit back and listen to.
One thing I've never had to worry about is my hair, Bulldog. I've had some absolute stinkers along the way, that's for sure, including my debut.
Just Google God, Michael Clark hair. It's amazing.
We might get Buzz to do a full page the Clarkie hairdos.
We'll Buzz is due to write a horrible article on me. It's been a while.
We'll get 12 of the photos going right back to your debut.
How come you have escaped your head this morning?
It's 7:30. We're going to the news.
Well, welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. We've got Roger Rashid coming up shortly to break down or preview tonight's quarterfinals. Two Aussies involved, Nick Kyrgios. And if you're just tuning in to the news this morning. He's front page of the paper, The Telegraph, this morning as well. News overnight that he's set to face court August 2 in Canberra. The Canberra Times reported that there's an allegation of common assault against his ex-girlfriend relating to an incident last December. And through his solicitor, who has said, well, essentially said that he hasn't been charged, although if you're going to court, you're going there on a charge, but through his solicitor saying that, well, the allegations aren't certain and are not considered as fact, and he doesn't consider himself charged. So I'm sure Nick might have more to say about that after the game tonight, but not much being said from his side yet other than that through his solicitor. Nonetheless, he's got a quarter final at Wimbledon tonight, as he looks to make the final four at a Grand Slam for the very first time. And he's a hot favourite as well, up against Chilean Christian Garin. They've never met before. There are only three places difference in the rankings. Kyrgios ranked 40, Garin 43rd in the world. Kyrgios is $1.23 with Tab, and Garin $4.20. And Alia Tomjanovic, the Aussie, is $2.50, a slight outsider. She was outsider against Elise Cornet, though, and got the job done there the other day. And Elena Rybakina, the Kazakhstan player and 17th seed, is the $1.53 favourite in that match tonight. Last night in the cricket as well, outstanding performance from England, who are flying at the moment, in their one-off test against India, which was actually the fifth test of the series that couldn't be concluded 12 months ago due to COVID reasons. England, chasing 378 for victory, have done it in a canter, three wickets down, and that was courtesy of an unbeaten 269-run partnership between Joe Root, who finished not out, on 142, and Johnny Bairstow, 114 not out. And that is England's highest ever run chase in the fourth innings of a test match, thankfully beating the 359 they chased down famously against Australia in the Ashes at Headingley 3 years ago. Clarkey, they are up and about. Ben Stokes, Brendan McCullum, this new captain-coach partnership is, getting England very excited over there, 12 months out from the Ashes even.
Yeah, they're playing well, Middo. There's no doubt about it. You can't take that away from them. They've lost the fear of losing. They're willing to have a crack. They're willing to chase whatever's required. And more important, their players are standing up. Joe Root's been outstanding this year, as has Johnny Bairstow. I think Joe Root's the number one batsman in the world in Test cricket currently in regards to rankings. Johnny Bairstow wouldn't be far away. So he's obviously freed Johnny up and allowing him to play his natural game with plenty of confidence. I think Stokesy and McCullum are doing a good job, and that's a massive win. What did that series end up then, Minnow? That was the fifth test.
2-2.
2-2, okay. So, yeah, it's a big win from England. And again, they're playing in their own backyard. They know the conditions really well. India didn't bowl that well in the second dig, but that's a huge run chase. So you talk about, confidence building. in the lead up to the Aussies over there to play in the Ashes series. If they keep playing this brand of cricket, it's going to be a cracking series. Yeah. Again, I think playing in your own backyard makes a difference. I think we see that around the world now that every team seems to be much better at home. The hardest part is winning away, winning in places like, you know, teams winning in Australia or win in India. You know, opposition teams trying to win in the UK. So they've obviously made some major decisions. They've brought back the likes of Anderson and Broad, so they've got that experience with the ball. And then their batters are playing with freedom and are fearless. So, yeah, good start from the Poms, unfortunately.
Morning to you, Rog.
Morning, boys. How are we?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Never a dull day, to say the least, in the life of Nick Kyrgios. And, well, we wait this morning to this news that he's going to face court in Canberra the day he's got a quarterfinal at the All England Club. To what extent do you think this will affect his performance later tonight?
Look, I think once he steps out on the court, I don't think it's going to affect his performance at all. He's had the ability to put you know, anything aside and just sort of play a tennis match. I've seen that before. You know, overnight there would have been, you know, these practice sessions, there would have been all of a sudden cameras there, a host of cameras when he's walking around. They would have been trying to get photos of him or get a microphone in his face, you know, how that all rolls. And so that's, I guess, the outlier that's just sort of presented itself. So, you know, he'll stay pretty tight with his team and, you know, he knows he's got a great opportunity at the moment. He looks at the draw and he thinks, gee, I can get through this draw and get myself into a semi, into a final of Wimbledon. So I think he's, you know, for Nick, he's pretty well narrowed in and locked in. But obviously, it's something you don't want. You don't want to be walking onto a court with hanging over your head.
Rog, you say that you don't think he will take it onto the court, and again, and you know him a lot better than we do. In regards to mental strength, do you think he is quite mentally strong? Do you think he has the discipline to, you know, not allow this to creep into if something doesn't go right on the court and we see that big explosion? Do you think he's got that in him?
I think, Clarkie, for sure. Would I say there's a lot of mental strength there on a day-to-day basis? No, he's got an opponent, Garen, who beat Alex, you know, from two sets of love down, and you know, and got through, got, you know, found a way to win three sets. So he walks onto a centre court for the first time, never been there on centre court, Garen. Yeah. So he's going to be quite intimidated by the environment. I think you just can't help but be that for a certain period of time. It's whether Nick can come out and play some quality tennis and get himself in front. And I think the other, you know, other side of Nick, and this is why he stays involved in most tennis matches, is because he can win 3 points and he has got those weapons that give him some 3 points. So it buys him a little bit of freedom. And yeah, look, as it gets closer, there's more tension, more expectations around what you should do now, not what people say, oh, you know, Nick could potentially do this. Now it's, you know, I can do this. And what does that bring to him as well? And so, I guess expect the unexpected, hey? We don't really know what we're going to get, to be honest.
If you're coaching Garen, Rog, what do you tell him about Kyrgios? Do you tell how do you beat him? How do you go about wearing him down?
Well, you just got to stay in your lane, really, and not actually look up and actually get involved in on the other side of the court. So how do I, you know, look after my... Garen's actually quite a strong athlete. He can actually, you know, he's 6'1". He's quite an interesting guy. He's had 4 coaches in 3 years, so he doesn't mind rotating the coaches around. So, but he's got, you know, he's a strong athlete who can hit the ball with accelerated power. So he can actually control a bit of the court at times when he's got access to it, and he's not afraid to hit his way through trouble, which he did against Alex. And but Alex was a different opponent to Nick. He didn't bring those weapons, and he offers a consistency on the other side of the court, whereas Nick offers a roller coaster ride for you in your mind. So I guess you got to just, you know, when you play someone like that, it's all about playing your game. You know, I remember Leighton played a guy from the US called Justin Gimelstob, who was just theatre every time we went on the court. He competed, but it just there was so much going on, and we were out at Wimbledon. I think it was the fourth round or third round. And I said to him, "Oh, just don't get involved in the circus up the other end. You know, just sort of lock in and just and play the points on your side of the court, and let you know, don't look up. Sort of let your game sort of be controlled by yourself." And so if he can do that, Garen, he's got an opportunity. I think Nick's a heavy favourite in this match. Mm. There's no doubt about that. He's a heavy favourite. They haven't played before. Garen's in unknown territory. Nick's been to a quarterfinals. He's a favourite. His game very suited here, and I just can't see, unless he implodes, how he loses this tennis match.
Okay, give us a set prediction. 3-love, 3-1, 3-2. What are we doing?
Probably 3-1.
3-1.
3-1. Okay. 3-1 gives you some safety. Because you can't be assured, but 3-1 gives you a bit of safety.
$3.60 for our listeners with Tab. Kyrgios to win 3-1 in that one. Alia Tomjanovic, you tipped her to our listeners the other day, Rog. Great prediction there, considering she was a slight outsider as well. Something for us. So she's $2.50 tonight. Rybakina $1.53. Can we make a case for her again?
Yeah. Look, before I go to Ilo, the other thing with centre court is actually, I think I might have said it, it offers this level of respect. So when you get out in the court, you do tend to feel like you need to play in under a bit of a controlled, measured way. And I think that's, you know, that we saw that from Nick in his last round. For Ilo, this is a great opportunity as well. They've played once. Never on grass. Rybakina's she hits the ball big. She's got some weapons. She was a finalist in Adelaide this year, but hasn't dropped a set. And different proposition because she's got a big serve. She's not afraid to go after the ball. So does Isla. So Isla's opponent in the last round, Cornet, wasn't a big hitter. Didn't have a big serve. So offers a few little tricky bits. But there's no reason, you know. Put a little bit on Isla and enjoy the ride because she does have game. She has a bit of belief at this part of the tournament. She's been here before, hasn't got through to the semis, but been here before. And I'm expecting a good showing from her. But you know, a tricky opponent. It's the first time she's got herself in a position where I think she's got an opponent who can actually outstrike the ball.
What about in the doubles quarterfinals? We've got Ebden and Purcell taking on another Aussie in John Pearce.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I mean, this is the beauty of our game. I think we're tennis isn't, you know, obviously we're focused on the singles, but there are different ways of earning a living and having a job in tennis. And it is through doubles. You do also get to play the mixed doubles there. And, you know, John Pearce is just a well-established doubles player, but so too are the other Aussie boys who are having success together. And I think it's just finding a combination where you actually enjoy each other's companies, you've got some different strengths, and you're willing to play for the full season together, so you can generate some consistency of knowing what ball's coming off your teammates' racket at certain times and positions in the court. And, you know, the Aussies have been able to do that, and Johnny Pearce has been able to do it with a lot of other opponents as well. He's just got a nice, well-rounded, established doubles game. It's nothing big or solid, but he understands the movements of the doubles court and how to match up. So, look, it's a great way to play. Well, you don't have to be as fit as well on the doubles court. You look after half the court. So it's a little bit more fun and a bit of interaction, I guess, for a lot of the singles players. A lot of us, the players that have played a single sport, we sort of... everyone wishes they played a team sport as well at the same time. I'm not sure about it. I'm not sure about you guys in team sports, whether you thought I would have minded playing a single person sport, but I think the banter of the team is the thing that sports people like a lot. You go to work together, but and you go into battle together, but I just think the general banter of the teams is what makes it a lot of fun.
And just a comment before you go, Rog, on the performances of Novak Djokovic coming from 2-0 down this morning against Jannik Sinner, and also Cameron Norrie. He'll have Britain pumping after his 5-set victory over David Goffin.
Yeah, for Novak, you're 2-0 down. You're not seeing the ball well. It's not, you know, you broke early. You let it break at the start of the match, and look like, oh, this is a great start. Early runaway. Sinner was, you know, will be a struggle to find his way in. But then he went, you know, from 4-1 down, he captures the next two sets. Novak takes a toilet break. and just settles himself. And it's interesting with Novak because he can walk away, assess, come back, and then get into this lockdown mode where he plays really high level, and he can turn that on quickly. When you've been out there before, there's not an element of doubt because you've been able to come back from two sets of love. You know the court, you know five set tennis. Sinner's young, he's 21. He hasn't been out on this court before. He's now he's a believer when you've won two sets, but now there's a bit of doubt because hang on, now I've got a lot to lose. I'm two sets of love up against the world, you know, a six-time major winner here at Wimbledon. Wow, I've got a lot to lose from this point. How do I get over the line? And so, with Novak relaxing a bit, he found some amazing tennis and just lockdown tennis, and to win 6-3, 6-2, 6-2 was incredible. I think he beats Cam Norrie comfortably. Too much game. Cam Norrie's local, have the crowd on his side, but I think that's where Novak's the man to beat still. At the other end, Nadal's playing better tennis. He plays Taylor Fritz to get through. Fritz beat him at Indian Wells this year. Nadal had a cracked rib in the final there, it's a tricky match. He's got a couple of tricky opponents before he gets through, but obviously Nadal's a favourite on that side of the draw, but he's got some dangerous players in Nick and also Taylor Fritz to deal with prior to that.
It's going to be a big night, Rog. Thanks so much.
Thanks, boys. Have a great day.
Just got a text here. Hey, boys, listening on the app, wanted to chuck the wireless on. What's the frequency for the Batemans Bay area? It is 96.3 FM. No name for that text, but morning to all those listening on the South Coast. Loz's old favourite holiday destination. And, well, there's everyone else in Canberra as well.
A lot of Canberrans go down the south coast of Middell. It's only a couple of hours away.
Batemans Bay.
I don't think too many will be down this weekend, though, given all the rain.
We're not going anywhere much.
We're not going, no.
Except for half of Australia who's in Europe at the moment, Clarkey.
Yeah. I'm envious. Lots of photos. Lots of people having a good time. Actually, I've got a good... mate of mine gets married tomorrow, actually, in Tuscany.
Doing it tough.
So he's over there with his family and friends, and I'm here drooling and wishing I was there. Nothing against you guys or our listeners, but I'm just being honest. I would prefer to be in Tuscany.
What did Loz say before we had that week off? I was like, well, no offence, I won't be thinking of you one for one second.
Yeah, but that's harsh but fair.
So fair.
I sent you both a couple of text messages, but I didn't miss you that much in a week.
Yeah, no, I must say, I didn't think of you too much, boys. No, as much as I love you like brothers.
I'll stuff you both. Brad Davison, morning to you.
Morning, guys. Thanks for that.
I missed you, though, Dava.
Needed, guys. Was just bringing back memories of 30 degrees on the sailing boat in Croatia while
heaven.
Bucketing down rain outside and about 12 degrees here in the middle of winter. Thanks for that.
Well, we're talking about the rain. We see Warwick Farm. It's been transferred to Canterbury tomorrow.
Yeah, look, I spoke to Mark Jones back on Monday and it was pretty unlikely then, and then they topped about another 110 mil, I think, until yesterday, and, you know, we know it's just continued, hasn't it? So they've gone to Canterbury there tomorrow, so given it another day just to hopefully dry out. I'm not sure what the weather's like there in Sydney, guys, but here on the Central Coast, woken up to rain again this morning. So, look, fingers crossed we can get a bit of a break in the weather and we can get ahead with that meeting tomorrow on what's going to be, no doubt, a very wet track, but... yeah, hopefully we can get that racing ahead and we'll see how it all pans out there tomorrow.
Now, Chief Altony, this Victorian, is it headed to Randwick for the Winter Stakes on Saturday?
Yeah, I believe so. I did a couple of races down there in Melbourne this weekend as well, guys, but I believe the stable are keen to head to Sydney if they can get a run. Now, I thought it was 20th in the order of entry there tomorrow, and I did note it on Twitter last night, a few good form judges in Victoria sort of suggesting if it comes here, look out, because it's got some good wet form. Obviously, last time out in Melbourne, it was one of the best things beaten you'll ever see. It just got held up for three quarters of the straight and then got out about 100 from home and still had the audacity to chase hard and miss by about a neck. So the horse is absolutely flying in Melbourne, there's no doubt about it. But look, 20th in the order of entry, they... except with 13, I think it is, this weekend. But the way scratchings go, even if it's sort of an emergency, you would think it's most likely to get a run because on those heavy tracks we do get quite a few scratchings in Sydney. So I think more likely to get a run, but we'll see how that pans out. But, look, it's going to be a horse that a lot of punters will gravitate towards off that very luckless effort in Melbourne last time out.
Geez, fingers crossed we do race on Saturday, Dover. Like, we've still got plenty of rain coming, haven't we?
We have, but one good thing about Randwick is it has been one of the best drying tracks in Sydney now for the last year or so. It really copes with that weather well, and we've seen a few times now, surprised at how well it's handled it. So, again, we'll just have to wait and see how the week pans out, guys.
Any update on the two fallen jockeys over the last couple of days, mate?
Yeah, there's, I heard this morning Lee Kilner had a good night last night, so the news continues to be positive there. So fingers crossed we continue to hear more positive news there. Alyssa Meredith, there was updates on the Racing New South Wales site yesterday that she had two contusions on her brain but no swelling or bleeds, and she'd been moved to ICU there yesterday. The news at 9:15 last night was the doctors continue or to be happy with her progress and scans looking positive, so hopefully more will be known today. And sadly, guys, of course, there was a third jockey as well taken to hospital in the space of 3 days, basically. One, Andro there down at, suffered an accident at Flemington on Monday and then an induced coma down there. So, it's been a really tough day, really tough, you know, week, really, for jockeys in Australia. And we're just, you know, really hoping for the best with all three. But look, positive news with two, and we wait to hear about the third jockey there, and fingers crossed we can hear some positive news there as well.
Yeah, what a week, seriously. Yeah, thoughts and prayers for all concerned there. Also, Davo, just a reminder, the Cozzy tickets, they're on sale to win a share in $1.3 million, $5 a ticket. There's no individual limit on tickets available from your TAB app, your local pub, club or TAB agency. And sales close Wednesday, September 7, and those 14 winning ticket holders are going to be drawn Friday, September 9. And front page, we know it's been luckless heading towards this sort of race previously. Top of the market at $6 and deserves to be, so I just can't get that win in the town plate out of the head. What a performance that was.
Wasn't it? No doubt about it. And we know he's a very, very talented horse when they get him right. And that's the key. They'll be hoping to get him spot on for that race later this year. But yeah, get your tickets. It's going to be fascinating, the build up and the wheeling and dealing. If you do get a ticket, you know, you're in the box deep then, and you can do the negotiating with the trainers, and they're in the, you know, they've got to come to you basically because they want to get in. So you're in a great position, and interested to see how it all plays out.
Good on you, Davo. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.